Welcome back, WNST, TASS in Baltimore, and WNST.net. We are at State Fair. The chicken disappeared off the waffle. I went to the bathroom, and I don't know what happened.
Guilty as charged.
I didn't touch it.
Guilty as charged.
I see it.
I snipped your chicken.
Absolutely. Stuart Berger here. We're into segment number two. We're going to be at Fadley's next week with mayoral candidate
Brandon Scott.
So we'll have him at Fadley's next week. Also down the line, we've got Ben Cardin. We have Ben Jealous. We have
John Sarbanes. Big time. Guests coming.
Oh, and by the way, if you miss Sarah Heminger, you want to check that out at Baltimore Positive. We did that down at Jennings.
We've got Speaker of the House Adrian Jones, Delegate Maggie McIntosh, Senator Bill Ferguson, all-star cast coming up on Baltimore
Positive. Do I get to do it too?
You get to do it
yes.
too.
Keep doing it on Purple Friday. We're at State Fair eating waffles, and Stuart Berger's here. I'm going to get to him about the Twinkies, but at some point I'm going to beat the two of you up about your relationship and how you changed his life. So at some point, because he's told
We'll tell that story. We'll tell that
and
story.
And I thought you were the
Which
autograph.
One?
Where you made me leave my dream job at Catonsville High School.
Oh, that's right.
No. He never explained it to me as you made him leave. He said you requested that he come to Greenwood. He said it would be the end of his teaching career, and it was.
Yes.
Is that pretty much? So that is
accurate.
That sort of captured.
That's truthful, guys.
Listen, that's why I hang out with him.
Exactly.
I hear you.
Stuart, we spend a lot of time, and what we've really tried to focus on is leadership and what you learn as a leader, what you try to accomplish. Leadership is always about culture from where we think it's always about culture. So I want to go back to 28-year-old Stuart Berger, superintendent, 500-student school, to the Stuart Berger who was superintendent in Baltimore County, with stops along the way at Frederick and Wichita. How did Stuart Berger change and evolve in terms of leadership?
Oh, I think in a couple of ways. I don't think I fundamentally changed. I think when I think of the strengths and the weaknesses, and I could go on and on about the weaknesses, I was always committed to the mission. I really, really believed in that the school system ought to be for kids, and it was run for adults. It's run for the staff. It's run for the parents. It was
to
run
make teachers comfortable and parents comfortable. Yeah. Correct.
The kids come and go. The teachers stay. But I think obviously I learned. Believe this is going to be hard to believe. The Baltimore County guy was the mellow guy. So I had
mellowed by the time you got to Baltimore.
Big time.
People out there listening right now are going, really?
Yeah, exactly that. Can you imagine what the other version yeah. was like? I remember, I'll tell you, this is a great story. And so years ago when I was in my second superintendency, about a couple thousand kids, which is not unusual in Ohio or Pennsylvania, where it's all, you know, small districts, or most of them. So back in the old days, it was this thing called job targets. I won't bother you with it, but I said everybody had to do job targets. And it was on a Thursday, I was going to a meeting or something. I came back on Friday, and I said to my assistant, do you have all the job targets? And she said, no, the union has decided they're not doing job targets. And I said, okay. And it happened to be payday. And I said to the treasurer, give me the checks. Teachers went to their mailbox to get their check. Alas, there was no check. The president of the union called me and said, you can't do that. I said, well, I don't know. I think I can. I said, it's very simple. Bring me your job targets, and I'll hand you a check. And I remember everybody thought, probably now including me, but not at the time, well, that's insane. But they're not self-employed, nor was I. I worked for the board. They worked for the board. We had made a decision everybody was going to do job targets. Ergo, everybody was going to do job targets. And I got them all.
But, Stuart, I want to dig down on that a little bit, because I was thinking a lot as you were coming in today. In my career, in my experience, and now I look at my grandchildren and you know, they have many wonderful teachers. And in my experience, there were just thousands of outstanding teachers.
God,
my
I had wife, great teachers. I mean, I'm sitting with one of them, but I mean, I had...
wife was a
in
phenomenal...
In Baltimore County, people that you stood over, under, beside... some of my favorite people in my life were
no question,
teachers.
No question.
My sister-in-law and my wife, when we have a family of educators. So, given the fact that we have these so many great teachers that care deeply about kids, why was there always this battle? Because you believe that as well. So where was the disconnect? Because I know you believe there were thousands.
Oh, of course. Races. Absolutely. People, look, you know, I always tell people the difference between when I was studying education and then when I went to law school was, nothing against lawyers, but the passion that the people in education, oh, no, there's no question about it. The problem is, the system is set up, in my opinion, where the best are not rewarded, and those who shouldn't be there and hurt everything are still there. You know, you can argue about merit pay. You can argue, you know, all the traditional.
Oh, the worst teachers I ever had were the three tenured professors I had at University of Baltimore.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I'm just a traditional. I went to community college.
Sure.
The community college teachers I had were even better than the high school teachers.
Because they were committed to teaching.
They were there and loved teaching and loved Don Schaefer over at Dundalk Community College. Maybe you knew. I mean, just some of the greatest teachers I ever had.
Yeah, no question. So, you know, my problem with the teachers union and... is, well, first of all, philosophically, I don't think teachers should be in a union, but forget that for a second. The legitimate object of a teachers union is to protect the rights of teachers. That is a legitimate objective. That is why the teachers pay dues. Ergo, when something happens, that teacher expects to be represented and protected, which... I agree.
You actually understood that.
Well, I totally agree with it.
Right.
But what happens is, and you watch this, teachers' unions have a tendency to try to convince parents that the objective of a teachers' union is the welfare of students. Certainly, they're not opposed to that. Certainly, in their individual capacities, they're doing wonderful things for kids. I'll give you a shame. Albert Shanker was started the teachers union movement. He was in New York City where it started. And
40s, 30s, 50s, where are we here?
50s, early 50s.
Okay, go ahead.
And somebody came up to him and said, Mr. Shanker, how come you don't do more to worry about what's best for students? To which Shanker said, I will when they start paying dues. A totally legitimate answer.
Honest response.
Yes. There is, I remember when I was superintendent in Wichita, Shanker came to Wichita, and somebody said to him, what percentage of the teachers probably are ineffective? And I still remember this vividly. He said 30%. Nobody said a word. If I had said...
Well, everybody would tell you 20% of any job.
If I had said 30% of the teachers were ineffective, oh my God.
You'd have been running. Well,
oh, I'd have been
running out of town. I killed.
I would have. How could I say that? What's my? I remember one time I was at a Rotary meeting in Frederick, and somebody raised his hand and said, "What percentage of the teachers are not very effective?" And I kept trying, you know, not to answer.
Well, they're all great, so I finally,
and this guy is just pushing me, and I went 10%, and they all started laughing. It's the same thing, you know. You think back to this, everybody. You're talking about teachers? I'll tell you who gets the shaft. This will show you why I really am unpopular. Administrators. There is some insane belief that a school system, unlike any other organization, can run without anybody running it. That is, so the buses magically just pick up your child, right? No. All sorts of people are involved in making sure that bus gets there.
The lunch lady.
Exactly. You get somebody to make sure all the stuff is ordered. The principal. The principal's an administrator. So this, you go to any meeting and you ask them, are there too many administrators in Baltimore County? Yes. Every hand. Then you ask them the follow-up question. How many are there? You could cut it. Dr. Williams, the new superintendent, could come in here and cut the central office by 50%, 70%, he can go to a meeting and they will tell him the biggest problem in Baltimore County is too many administrators. So there are certain things you just have to fight. And this is where I believe this, for better or worse, in general, and Don and Ken are good examples, in general, not that we don't make mistakes, we make lots of them, people get promoted for a reason, for the most part, and that is that they are more competent than some, not all, some people have no interest in being promoted, the last thing they want to do is make tough decisions, you know, they love teaching English and they're really good at it. But lots of people get promoted because they are effective. They are hardworking. They are intelligent. And maybe we ought to listen to what they say.
For example, you would have been an incredible lifetime social study. That was your,
oh, of course.
That's what you did. You could have taught social studies for 35 years, gotten the watch, and been the department chair.
Coach of baseball and lived happily ever after.
You could have done that. Like, and maybe when you were 26 or when you went to school, that's what you thought. The part that concerns me so much isn't the fact that I've known you and you should have been a social study teacher for 30 years. Instead, you went on and did something else. It's when I hear Dr. Hornbeck tell me, and when I was at the Howard County event at Damien O'Doherty through this week, and I'm hearing about the teachers don't make it to the fifth year, that much like in my old industry in journalism, where it was the stepping stone to get the job at the New York Times. You know, you were coming to the Sun or starting at the Eagle to get the job, that you were going to move around. You know, as a kid, I grew up thinking every elementary school teacher was going to do that for 40 years, right? But there is a real incentive to leave the industry when something better comes calling, and we're losing good teachers, not maybe to administration, but to other fields.
I think the number that David Hornbeck, and you may be familiar with this, Stuart, because we are going to have you talk about what you're doing all over the United States right now, but I think the number that David Hornbeck uses is the most recent data, is that when you look at first-year teachers, only 47% of them make it past year two. I mean, that's pretty sobering thought.
Look at something, if you want to...
Bartenders that hang around long.
Amazing. Yeah, right. My son was one, yeah.
Sure.
Look at it this way. Teach for America is a very interesting program where they took college grads from very good schools without any formal teaching training, and they put them into the toughest schools like Baltimore City, you know, Prince George's, places like that, and all over the place. Really bright people. While Teach for America will not admit this, and my niece was in it, she made it 3 years, 60% make it one.
Right. It's so hard.
Of course, especially without training. It's hard enough when you've spent years, you know, student teaching and taking all the courses and doing, you know.
Yeah, but set the two of you over right now into West Baltimore. You guys, you've trained your whole lives.
We're way too old.
It's a young person's game.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a young person's game. It takes a lot of energy that we like to think we had it once upon a time.
But you have wisdom.
It's a young person's game.
But when you're young, you don't have the wisdom.
But you know what? Let me tell you this. What we
and
could.
The only way you get the wisdom is to hang around long enough to get it, right?
Let me tell you what we still could do. I agree with you. The energy. I can imagine teaching five classes of English and grading the papers. I don't think so. But your point's well taken. We would still.
It's such a hard job. You wouldn't want it.
Oh, gosh. No, I admire the people who do it.
Yeah.
We would still instinctively know how to treat kids.
Yes.
And that is, there is nothing wrong with not being, especially for a woman, there is nothing wrong with not being cut out to be a teacher. That is not inherently a bad thing. There is something really bad.
What do you mean when you say especially for a woman?
Because it's not so much anymore, but our generation... Nurse, woman, secretary.
Oh, I see what you're saying, how they were limited to those
professions. Debbie, I remember when they made my wife in high school take typing. They insisted. She said, I don't want to take typing.
Make the boys take typing.
Of course not.
Right.
Because
I got thrown out of class.
Oh,
Mr. Polonis took the paper.
Out of typing class? You got thrown out of typing class?
I got thrown out of typing class. That's why I had to go see Moeller again, and he got me into horticulture. I got into the horticulture class.
That's good.
I'm not making that up. Miss Wallace. Right there in the
can you type now?
Yeah, I type. Yeah.
You taught yourself.
I know we've got you've got
that's
a plane to catch and other things, so I don't want to run over. One of your trademarks, I thought about it a lot today over the years because I think we're still talking about it. And tell me if we are or not, Nationwide, you were a big advocate, which is why so many of your supporters were the principals. You were a believer in site-based management. Nestor's going to say, wait a minute, there you guys go again. What's that mean? And the short and simple of that is, correct me if I'm wrong, Stuart would say as a superintendent, Don Mower, do what you think is right at Catonsville High School.
Because we'll Catonsville's judge, different than Towson.
Different than Towson, different than Sparrows Point. We'll judge at the end of the year whether or not correct. You've done a good job. But you don't need me to be directing every single action from the
this
central
office. This is Steve Bisciotti not coming in week two and managing
correct.
Managing the Ravens this week.
Is that
right?
A fair description of site-based management?
Yeah, and I think...
But we've shifted away from that, right?
Well, I think when you have... I mean, what is, ironically, I'm just giving a plug, but two of the best principals that were ever in... Baltimore County, you're right here, counting Miss Wynn. And
what school was she?
She Donna started Sudbrook. Don't even get me going there. It's too long.
All you Sudbrook graduates out there listening to Baltimore Positive, Donna Flynn is here reconnecting with Stuart Berger. One, as Stuart said, one of the truly outstanding educators, went on to a great career after Baltimore County.
Yep. But anyway, so what I think what happens is the same with teachers. I think we've lost trust, so the answer is to program them because we don't trust them, okay? So what do you do when you have a principal whose judgment you don't trust? Well, my view is you change principals. And I used to have this line, you can't change people, you need to change people. Okay, right or wrong. Most people have certain talents. I would not have been a great architect, even close. I would not. I'd love to play for the Twinkies, and I'd love to be on Broadway.
Couldn't hit the curve.
Only one thing stops me, talent.
Right.
Okay, other than that,
always
I'm great.
You also said at one time you wanted to be a comedian in the Catskill.
That I could have done. I'll always regret that, too. I could have been
you
the
and Nestor, you both want to
I could have been the opening act. I could have been the opening act, Nestor.
Lack of talent has been a big hindrance to my career.
Me too, man. Me too. But, of course, I believe it, and And it works well when you have intelligent, hardworking people. It doesn't work as well. You know, we promote, you and I, Donna, we were all teachers. There's a very important skill set in being a teacher. Some of those skills are very valuable in being an administrator. But there are also some other skills you need. If you absolutely loathe conflict, there's nothing wrong with that. I just don't like conflict. I don't want to fire anybody. That doesn't make you a bad human being. You can argue it makes you a good human being. But you can't be a principal.
Right.
You can't. Because you are going to be inevitably forced to make hard personnel decisions. Can I tell you one
That's leadership.
Yeah, please do.
Fast story. You talk about when I was a kid. So we consolidated these two school systems. I'll try to make this fast. The day, it happened in January. January 1st, the consolidation went in. The elementary principal from the other district calls me, and he says, I need to talk to you. I said, well, in this rural, so you can imagine, he was 40 miles away. I said, come on in, then we'll talk. He comes in, he says, I have this terrible teacher. I need to get rid of her. What's the middle of the year? I'm thinking, why are you bothering me with this? The former superintendent, the superintendent of the other school district who didn't get the job as superintendent, his daughter. He wants me to go fire this guy who's already been humiliated. He's twice my age, three times my age, probably. And I said to him, I said, Dave Lamb, I still remember it. I said, I can't do that. I can't bring myself to do that. But at the end of the year, I did. She didn't have tenure. And I did non-renew her contract. Her father was on my front porch crying. Crying. This is 50 years ago. I remember it. I remember the whole scene. I did not want to non-renew this woman's contract, but there was no way in the world she could be in front of 30 or 25,
because
whatever,
again,
kindergartners next year.
She wasn't competent.
She was totally incompetent. She was terrible. She yelled at him. She ridiculed him. I mean, if you would, this was rural, so you know, sometimes you can get away with a few things. If you'd have tried to get away with that at Catonsville Elementary School, there'd have been some problems. And, you know, I thought to myself, good God, I hate myself. But I knew it was right. I knew it was right. And not that I didn't make political decisions, because, you know, the famous 80-20. Of course I made political decisions. But there are some issues that you have to, that are what I call mission-based. You have to fall on the sword.
Well, at the end of the day, for either of you, and you have children, you say, would I want this Correct. Man or woman to be in front of my child?
That's right.
As a 4-year-old, 8-year-old, 15, whatever it is this person fit to do this or not?
Nestor, every school that I was ever in, and Stuart knows this, I had what I called the Jennifer and Jeffrey rule. And I actually explained it to my staffs up front. And I had terrific teachers and terrific staffs, and I thought they did great things. But they knew that when I walked into their classroom, the parents of every child wasn't walking in and out of their classrooms. So I asked a simple question every time, the one you just said. If Jennifer or Jeffrey were in this class, would I be satisfied, and would I want this teacher teaching Jennifer and Jeffrey? And if the answer was no, like Stuart said, then I had to do what was right, because it wasn't okay for me to just say, well, I'll let it go.
It's good enough for your kids,
it's good enough for your kids, but not for mine. Now, Stuart, you alluded to, and Nestor's heard me talk about it. they talk about the Bill Walsh tree in football. There's this Stuart Berger tree, literally all over the country, who implement what we call the 80-20 rule. And I continue to tell people that in my decades of studying, learning, looking at leadership, nothing has ever been more valuable to me than Stuart Berger's 80-20 rule. Educate us. Educate us.
I brought it up a few minutes ago.
Yes, and I can give you an example that actually involves a good friend of Donna's. I believe 80% of what crosses a leader's desk, let's say a school superintendent, a principal, whatever, is unimportant to the mission. It's irrelevant. I'll give you a best example, your parent. If a parent wants Ms. Jones in third grade teacher instead of Ms. Smith, what do I care? And if you tell me, well, if we do that, Ms. Jones won't have any kids, then I want to know why she's here. You know, if no parent wants her.
Well, suppose I say to you, I am going to push back on that example.
Okay.
But if I move your kid, then I have to move his kid. I have to move every other
kid.
Okay,
so what?
Okay.
So what do I care?
But keep going.
So we'll have the good teacher will have 50, the bad teacher will have...
I might have put that in the 20.
Yeah, that's
go ahead,
right.
Keep going.
Yeah, and you could...
Well, it's interesting that the best teacher I ever had, not for his ears, was a sixth grade teacher named Betsy Johnson, who was... by any stretch, crazy. I mean, she was crazy.
They're
then.
Not mutually exclusive.
She was crazy
right.
in my Archie Bunker neighborhood in 1979.
Sure.
No fifth grader wanted to see that they drew Miss Johnson.
Right.
She was a hard ass. She made you learn languages. She grew plants. She was into weird science.
Yep.
She was nothing like what anyone in Dundalk had ever seen in 1979. And if all of our parents could have had a PTA meeting and thrown her out and not gone there, we would have. I think they did try to throw her
I'm
out.
Sure.
I think they did eventually, and she was the best teacher I ever. She changed my life.
Yeah, and it happens.
So go back to 80-20. So,
but if it were up to the parents in that neighborhood, she never would have told me.
So
we interrupted
20,
you.
But that's a 20. You would never let the parents. There's a difference between asking for your kid, big difference, and telling me the teacher. That's a 20. You can't tell me what teacher's going to be here. That's the principal's job. I don't care. What we were talking about before. I don't care if every parent in the school says the teacher's going. If the principal says the teacher's staying, the teacher's staying. But anyway, there's 20% of what crosses your desk that is mission-driven. It's important to what happens for kids. When I got here, and I wish Donna were still here, but Phyllis Burke, remember Phyllis Burke? May she rest in peace?
Yes, absolutely.
Was assistant superintendent curriculum. She was meeting with all these parents who want to take these books out of the library. Okay? And the school system had a process that existed long before me. If you object to a book, you can you fill out a form, and it goes to a committee, and you know, a bunch of educators and parents, you know, a very diverse committee, and they just insisted they wanted to circumvent that process. They knew these books were evil, and they wanted them out of the library. And Dr. Burke, who was assistant superintendent for curriculum, and her people, we're meeting with them every single Monday night. And I said, this is insane. I said, go, I hadn't been here maybe 3 months. I said, go tell them, everybody knows the new superintendent's crazy. He's not going to take the books out of the library, and we're not allowed to meet with you anymore. And she said, I can't do that. I said, yes, you can, because I'm not taking the books out of the library.
Yes, you can, right?
Yeah, yes, you can. Tell them I'm crazy, and she told him, she went back and she said, and if you knew Phyllis Burke, she was not somebody who was sort of like that. And she went back and she said, the new superintendent said to tell you he's crazy and he's not taking the books out of the library. And that was the end of it. And
so the 80 give in, the 20 never give in.
Exactly. And you try to make friends on the 80. Because
and the 20 got you fired, though.
No, you know.
No.
Yeah, you know, maybe so.
The 20 you won't give in on.
Always get you fired. Yes.
The thing that I won't cross the line on is.
But, Nestor, I'll tell you what I always knew was going to happen. We were fighting all these fights with the special ed people, the gifted people, the teachers union. And I said, what's going to happen? I always would talk to people like Don and Don and people. I said, what's going to happen is eventually somebody's going to get smart enough to recognize we all have different interests, but we have one thing in common. We don't like that bozo.
Right.
Okay? And once we get together, and then, you know, you talk about, you know, everybody loves the apocryphal story with the window. But
for those who don't know, there was a night. Come on, give
a
little.
Tell it?
I'm going to give a little history that there were hundreds of people jammed in
to
a little room in the Board of Ed, and the security team that night was worried about your safety. And as much as you protested, they said we had big windows in this room, Nestor.
That went all the way to the floor.
All the way to the floor. They said we're going to open this window, and you're just going to walk out the window, and we'll take you home that way. Stuart protested. Finally, the security team said, you can protest all you want. We're not walking through the crowd. Yeah. That's the context. Now pick it up.
Well, and clearly the story became apocryphal that I climbed out of some second story, you know, window. But every bone in my body said not to do that. And here's what had happened. We were in this, what do you think, half the size of this?
That half the size of this restaurant.
With a bunch of people behind the board president. We knew we were going to have a night when everybody was going to yell at us. The board was set. We were prepared to sit there till 2 in the morning.
And be yelled at.
Yeah, vent whatever it is. We know we're idiots, you know, and the board. In fairness to the board, and Donna was on the board once upon a time, they're volunteers. They don't get paid. And they were prepared to take it. All of a sudden, I'll even name her name because she's one of my absolute favorite people, Rose Hellman, one of the funniest women I've ever known and a wonderful person. It just got to be too much for her. With all these people behind her getting louder and louder. And without discussing it, she made a decision to adjourn the meeting. Oh, my.
Wildcat.
They went crazy.
Yeah, and they it was front, as you can imagine.
Show's over.
It was front page of the Sun.
Yeah.
And I've often heard you refer to that as biggest mistake you ever made.
Oh, the window?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God, yes. I should have. My car was from here to there. It's a bunch of parents. What are they going to do, beat me up? Give me a break. I mean, it was.
They didn't have AR-15.
No, they couldn't have shot me. They'd have done it long. They had it years ago.
The last point about 80-20 that I always remember, you always had a footnote. You described the 80, you described the 20, and you always said, and the real challenge for leaders
is figuring
out
to
know which is which.
That's the hardest part. What is so important to you that you just can't compromise? I always used to laugh because people would say, God, how could Stuart Berger have not known what was going to happen when he did this? I did know.
Right.
You take on the gifted establishment, my wife being part of it, okay, in any school district, who do you think you're fighting with? You're fighting with the wealthiest, most powerful. Who do you think it is? The disadvantaged kids who make up the gifted and talented? You're dealing with
the most connected people in the entire district.
Lawyers and the doctors and the accountants and the CFOs and all of these people. They legitimately, and I always say this, they legitimately want what's best for their kid. And I have no problem with that. Their job is to worry about Jeff and Jennifer. That is a very legitimate thing. Our job is to worry about everybody.
So 1995, we're going to wrap up soon because I know Stuart's got to catch a plane.
Yeah, I do.
It's 1995. You look back, turmoil, you end up leaving Baltimore County before your term is up. But when you look back, pre-K, school breakfast programs, magnet schools, diversifying gifted and talented.
Inclusion.
And bringing inclusion. So those are five.
Can I add a sixth?
Yes, please.
I think many people would say the quality of, especially administrator, Not that they weren't good people, because they were, obviously they were. I think we left with a pretty good staff to take the thing the next, to take, you know, calm it down, which is what it needed. But I look back at Baltimore County, and, you know, people say, I always thought, because I had been in Frederick once upon a time, that I would end up coming back to Maryland, but coming back to Montgomery County. Long story, but anyway, neither here nor there. Baltimore County was obviously far more conservative than I was. When I look back at what got accomplished and the friendships that I have to this day.
You even got free chicken and waffles today, Adam.
I could. Well, that's not bad, right?
True.
That's not
so
bad.
So you're proud of that 3 years?
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh, yeah. Yes. Look at all. Oh, my heavens, yes. And, you know, I still talk to lots of people. I think there are very few people that could say, there are lots of people that say it was a disaster. But somehow, I remember seeing Al Liebernight maybe 10 years ago. We ran into each other somewhere. He had been the board president once upon a time. And he said, you know, it's amazing. Everything we did is still there. Well, if it were that terrible, somebody would have gotten rid of it.
Three of the premier high schools in Baltimore County right now are Eastern Tech, Western Tech, and Carp.
Sure.
They're Stuart Berger creations. Yeah. They did not exist.
With some Mary Carey and a whole
right.
lots
I mean,
of
the other
people,
leaders
yeah.
that made
yeah,
it
Ken
happen.
Ken and other people.
The Bob Kemrys, the
Bob
Kemrys,
exactly right.
The Ken Birches.
Yep.
But they're three of the best high schools. Real quick before we let you go, urban education. You travel all over. You're working as a consultant now all over the United States.
Right.
Wait, if I bring you to fix Baltimore City, what do you do?
What do you do?
What do you do for me?
Let me say this about Baltimore City. I have met the CEO.
Oh, coming on the show, Dr. Santelise.
Well, that's good because she's way smarter than I am, and
I saw her on TV.
Yeah, exactly. Very impressive woman. What would I do? Beats the heck out of me. I think what you have to start by doing is trying. What you're not going to be any surprise. I don't know how to do it. You've got to change the culture. You've got to change the ethos. You've got one of the saddest things during my time here was. I was the beginning of the real mass migration from the city. And what happened was the schools that the African-American kids went to from the city, Milford Mill, Woodlawn...
Randallstown.
I knew I was forgetting something. Were not performing. These kids were middle-class kids with middle-class parents, many of them coming from... parents who had been, you know, worked in Social Security, worked in very good jobs. And I kept saying to myself, I don't understand this. Why are these outcomes like this? I know the answer. Expectations. When you had white, primarily Jewish kids, you said, aha, that culture, there's no question, they're going to be good students. They'll all have their books. I'll give them homework. And they'll do it. Ah. I'm exaggerating.
Sure.
No question exaggerating to make a point. African-American kids. Uh-huh. The culture is not, no emphasis on learning, which is crap. That's not true. And we started getting performance that just did not match the demographics. And I think every superintendent since me has fought that. Now, of course, you have a school system that's primarily kids of color. And when that happens, one of the things I'm spending a lot of time doing training's too strong a word. I give a lot of
advising
to urban superintendents because it is so hard. I didn't have to give Dr. Santelise any advice. She's smarter than I am. But there are people who, not that they're not smarter than I am, but I did this for over 20 years. You learn, God willing, you learn something. And what has happened in the urban superintendent, understandably, and I'm going to use a Baltimore County example. I hope this doesn't become a mistake. Because there needs to be diversity of leadership, which you and I certainly believe in. When I came to Baltimore County, it was my sixth superintendency. Hopefully, I learned something along the way. And what's happening now, because we want diverse, legitimately want diverse leadership, we're putting people into superintendencies. This is the 24th largest school district in the United States. In my opinion, one should have some. You don't have to be have been a superintendent. I think Dr. Williams is going to do great. I met him for 15 minutes. What do I know?
But
I think
certainly he has deep experience.
Oh, and he's certainly in meeting him has the personality to pull this right off, and the intellect. But we have to promote so many folks. There's a major urban school district just had a scandal. A superintendent left. And they have promoted a gentleman who I don't know from Adam, so I can say this. He's never taught. He's never been a principal. He was a lobbyist. Nothing wrong with lobbyists.
Is this DeVos? No, I'm sorry.
No. That's a whole different segment. That's a whole segment. But I am a betting man, aren't I?
Right.
The odds are certainly, we believe that this is going to blow up.
Right.
There is a man, to be the superintendent of any school system is challenging. To be the superintendent of a diverse school district is incredibly, and then if you add poverty and no money and, Baltimore City, and I've had a lot, all the way back to Walter, a lot of good friends who have been, whatever they call them, CEO or whatever the title is. By the way, changing the title doesn't change anything. But nothing's insurmountable. But they are faced just with the things that we take for granted. Getting the buses to run. Heat. They have heat problems, right? Just
running water.
Building problems, water.
Yes.
Yeah, we talked. I mean, it's wonderful.
We've had Nancy Grasmick with us. We've had Dr. Because education's so important. And having an educator as my co-host on this thing, it should be no shock that, 50% of what we're talking about here is education. Because if you could fix that.
You'd fix everything.
You fix everything.
And during the break, I was telling Stuart about our incredible conversation that's going to run the next week or two with Sarah Heminger at Thread.
That's
making
amazing.
A difference now for over 500 students because they create a family with them. But the key point is, Stuart, every one of those kids is being successful. So what does that say? It's not the kids. We've got to identify the structure. So I think we knew when we started this was going to be great. Where are they now? Or as Stuart likes to say, I ain't dead yet. It's been great having Stuart.
We didn't even talk any twins, man.
Call me at the end of the month. He has my number.
A year and a half ago, I'm out at the Super Bowl in Minnesota.
Okay.
And I go every year and we set up a table
sure.
like this. People come by.
Sure.
Rod Carew came by.
Oh, wow.
Well, he has the heart of a former Baltimore Raven, right?
Yeah.
So my wife's a transplant survivor. So yes. Rod Carew came by.
Well, I didn't know the heart's a former Baltimore Raven. I didn't know that.
Rod Carew's heart
is
a former Baltimore
I knew he had a transplant.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that.
A family from Wisconsin and a young man who tragically passed. Literally, the Ravens were playing. So Rod Carew has this young man's heart in his body with his mother, with the mother of the child. So we're sitting there, and I realize, I'm in the Mall of America,
yeah.
and there's a plaque over there where Carew used to hit the baseball. So
right.
I got some twins. For
oh
you,
yeah,
right? You've
yep.
been at Target Field.
Oh,
beautiful!
You're talking, Mr. Twinkie.
Now so, Twinkies are going to Cleveland tonight, and guess where I'm going?
Cleveland.
You better believe.
Not what a surprise! There you go.
Rock and roll.
To say that he loves the twins is an understatement. What a great visit, Dr. Stuart Berger.
Thank you guys. It
Thanks,
was a
Doc.
Pleasure.
Appreciate you.
Thank you, Don.
Always learn something.
We have all these scholarly people.
I told you.
Yeah.
Just don't ask us to fix your wrist, okay?
I'm going to go fix some waffles and some chicken and some chicken Chesapeake and some other stuff over here. We're at State Fair. We're in Catons. We'll be back next week at Fadley's with Brandon Scott, City Council President and
Mayoral
candidate. We're back at WNST.net, AM 1570 and WNST, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore sports.